morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Mother's Day at LCUUC. This is our official or unofficial recognition of the holiday that I believe was created by Hallmark, or am I wrong about that? Noble nonetheless. My name is Gus, and I'm going to be your worship rep for today. Board rep. There we go. Hall's the worship rep. If anyone has any questions about Unitarian Universalism, if you're a guest and you would like to either learn more about it, or if you want to consider becoming a member, I'm going to be in the social hall after the service, and I would be welcome to talk to you, and we can discuss it if you'd like. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements listed in the order of service, and be sure to take the OOS home with you, that's the order of service, to read them. In addition, there is one other announcement I have here. Next week is recognized by a large number of national, state, and local bicycling organizations as Bike to Work Week. Some local events you might be interested in are on Wednesday of this week at 7 p.m., Ride of Silence in Memory of Lives Lost in Car and Bicycle Accidents. And next Sunday, we have Bike to Worship Sunday. People will be riding to church and other places of worship all over the place, including here. I invite you to greet those around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table out in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and about Unitarian Universalism. If you are visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they go to their religious education classes. And we do have religious education today. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just outside the doors here to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick up your children from their classes if they're light enough to pick up. And we always enjoy getting to know our guests. So in case anyone has brought themselves here today as a guest, or someone else has brought them, this would be a very good time for you to rise, state your name, and tell us about yourself so we can welcome you. Any guests? I guess not. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner over by the library is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service today. I hope this service is inspiring to you, as I know it will be to me. Pat Romanchik and Karen Mooney graduated in 2011 from Meadville Lombard Theological School, and we are working, and are working this year serving chaplain residencies. Karen is at Lutheran General Rainbow Hospice and Pam at Elmhurst Memorial Hospital. Karen is a wonderful musician and songwriter and brings her own amazing grace to the people she serves. Pam is the mother of three grown children and a poet and a spiritual seeker looking for moments of grace.
Hey, I'm live. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I know that at least two people out here are visitors because they're my parents. I grew up in Wisconsin. They're from Mequon. They inhabit on some Sunday mornings, don't hold this against them, on some Sunday mornings, the UU Church over there called UU Church North. It's a very similar kind of building, built out of a hexagonal barn, and when I drove up this morning, I thought, oh, we always find unique places for ourselves. And people take a trip in and find in within these walls a place of beauty, as you have created here, a place that we might seek, a place that maybe sometimes we'll even find, but find enough and hold with gentle enough hands that we will seek again. This is a beautiful song by a songwriter by the name of Peter Mayer, who is out of Minneapolis or around Minnesota. If you haven't heard of him, I entreat you to go and find him. He's just a beautiful songwriter and helps us to find ways of looking at the world that we might not have seen before. This is his song, Holy Now. When I was a boy each week, Sundays we would go to church. We'd pay attention to the priest. He would sing the holy word. Consecrate the holy bread. Everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. When I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time Moses split the sea in two, and Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad, miracles don't happen still. Sometimes I can't keep track, 'cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. Wine from water is not so small, but an even better miracle is anything is here at all. Oh, so the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, finding where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, I rarely bit my fingertips. Now I have to hold my breath, swimming in a sea of it. Used to be a world half dead, heaven's decorated and done. Now I'm walking with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. Read a questioning child's face, say it's not a testament, that'd be very hard to say. Oh, see another new morning come. Say it's not a sacrament, I tell you that it can't be done. This morning outside I stood, I saw a little reverend bird, chiming like a scripture verse, singing like it can't be heard. Made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then. 'Cause everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. Everything, everything,
everything is holy now. Our opening words Gentle me, Holy One, into an unclenched moment. A deep breath, a letting go of heavy experiences, of shriveling anxieties, of dead certainties. That softened by the silence, surrounded by the light, and open to the mystery, I may be found by wholeness, upheld by the unfathomable, entranced by the simple, and filled with the joy that is now. I invite you now to open your hymnals to page number 334. Our first hymn is Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire. Please rise as you're willing or able.
Decided by irrelevant agencies.
Our husbands shall not come to us, reeking with carnage, for caresses and the lost.
Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience.
We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs.
From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm.
The sword of murder is not a balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession.
As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel.
But let them be first, as women, to bewail and commemorate the dead.
Let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace.
And be sharing after a little time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God.
Now is the time for our story for all ages, and I would like like to invite up anybody who is young or young at heart to join me on the stairs here. And I encourage those who feel young at heart to come forward as well. Hi. Good morning. Hi. So I have a story today from a place in the Middle East. Does anybody know where the Middle East is? Suppose it's the middle of the East, but what do we call East, I guess?
Waukesha.
Waukesha, okay. This is a story from Waukesha. I want you all to know that. This is a story about a traveler. There are many places that are Middle East. I always wonder if the people in Middle East think that they're in the Middle East, because they're not in the East. They're in the middle of something else, right? This is a story by, well, it's inspired by a guy named Peter Ferrucci, who wrote a really beautiful book called The Power of Kindness. And this story is about a man who is just having some trouble, okay? If any of us ever had some trouble, had a bad day, I know I have, okay? He felt like everybody was out to get him. It just was horrible. All of his family, he felt like his brothers and sisters and his children were making fun of him all the time. They were picking on him. They didn't like what clothes he wore. They didn't like what food he ate. They just thought his haircut was horrible. He cut it in a different way. They thought that was worse. Okay, his wife was even worse. His partner, the person that was supposed to help him in life, he felt like she tormented him all the time. Just was on him about, why haven't you taken out the garbage, and what is these signs about Scott Walker on our front lawn, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It just was bad, okay? And he finally said, I have had enough. I can't do this anymore. I want to seek heaven. Have anybody ever wanted to run away from home? I have. Run away from work. Run away from school. He went all around the town of Waukesha, and he finally found a wise person there. And he said to the wise person, how do I find heaven? The wise person actually told him, gave him detailed instructions. He may have gone onto Google and said, how do I find heaven, and printed him off some kind of MapQuest thing, right? Okay. He told him how to find heaven, and the man took off and went in search of heaven, and he walked, and he walked, and he walked. And I'm going to get up right now, and I'm going to walk. If anybody would like to join me, you can. He walked far and wide. He walked as far as he could find. He walked, and he walked, and he walked. And this is going to be sort of like the people who are taking their bikes out. It seems like it's a really short journey, but it's not. He walked, and he walked. He's looking at the map that his person had gotten him. He's walking, and he's walking, and he's walking. And he gets so tired that he says, that's it, I'm taking a sleep for the night. And he stops. And being a very practical person, he sets his shoes exactly in the direction that he was walking. So he says, this is good, I'm going to go to sleep, I'm going to set my shoes here, I'm going to get up in the morning, and what am I going to know? I'm going to know exactly which direction I'm headed, right? Wonderful! Falls asleep. A demon, an impish sort of person of some kind, comes forward into the night. Do you know what they did with the shoes? Oh my gosh, this is a secret. He took the shoes and he turned them back the other direction. So when he got up in the morning, he thought he was supposed to head that way. That way's right back to where he was. So he gets up in the morning. He says, my shoes are exactly where I think they should be. I know where I need to go. This is the way to heaven. And he walks and he walks. He's a little bit more excited this time because he knows that he's almost there. And he gets there and he sees off in the distance, there's a town there. Oh my goodness. This town of heaven. It looks a lot like my town, but it's different. It's somehow taller and bigger, and they have fruit and vegetable markets that'll give me good things to eat. And they have wonderful, oh, and look, there's my house. It looks just like my house, but it's a little bit more cozy. It feels comfortable. And look at all of you. You're all here. Oh my goodness. But you're so much smarter than my kids were. And you're so much better behaved. And you like me. You think my haircut's kind of cool. You think that maybe if I don't take the trash out, it's all right. He found his way back into heaven, back to where the wise person, the wise person was probably the person who turned the Jews around, right, said that he would look. Do you know what was different? The only thing that was different, he was looking at all of this, knowing that it was where he was supposed to be. What would it look like today for you to know that you are exactly where you're supposed to be?
Now is the time for us to share our joys and concerns with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring a microphone to you. Please briefly tell us your name and the joy or concern you wish to share. I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern. First, I will light the memorial candle to acknowledge the women of the world. May we hear them and learn from them.
My name is Esther, and last Monday night, our son and daughter-in-law, the ones that live in Germany, had a new little baby girl, 8 pounds, 4 ounces, Sophia. So they now have 2 kids. The other one is 2. So we're proud to be grandparents again.
Hi, I'm Barb. I ask you to light a candle of concern for a good friend whose lymphoma has recurred and it is progressing rather rapidly. Prayers for him and his family.
Hi, I'm Allie. I just have a joy that it's Mother's Day and I want to celebrate my mother and also all the many pseudo mothers that I have here at church. It's just wonderful.
Hi, I'm Josh. I have a concern for my sister. She just kind of got out of a bad relationship, and she's trying to move out on her own, and she just actually got a new place and then lost her job. So hopefully everything works out for her.
I'm Christina, and a candle of joy for my sister, graduated a college degree yesterday. It was her third college, and after a battle with cancer, and very exciting day. And then also a candle of concern, but I've been putting off. I mentioned my aunt a couple of years ago. She's been battling cancer about 5 years now, and not doing well. She's got a 7-year-old, and her other son is finishing his first year of college. My concerns for her. Thank you.
I'm Diane. I've lost a dear friend, knew him since I was 15 years old, so was he, and he died after many, many years of health problems from which he sprang back each time and was back on the golf course, never lost his good attitude. He was a wonderful man, husband, father, grandfather, and friend. And so I would like a candle for joy for his wonderful life and sorrow to have lost him.
Now into a moment of peace, a moment when we take stock of our hearts, take stock of the lives that are outside of this space, take stock of those people that we have surrounded ourselves with. Every joy that is shared holds forth joy for all of us. Every concern holds forth shoulders and hands and feet with which to carry it with. May we know that everything that exists in our hearts is held in honor and peace in this place. And may we take just a moment to reflect upon that. Ways that you see the world because you're you. We give thanks for all of those times when life seems like a struggle, for all of those places where there are holes that we thought that we had filled time and time again. We give thanks. All of it makes up the fabrics of our lives, and for this life and for this breath, we give thanks.
I invite you to join us in singing our next hymn, number 1008 in the teal hymnal, When Our Heart is in a Holy Place.
We are blessed.
our reading today is from Anne Lamott. And she's talking about, it's from her book, Further Thoughts on Faith, Plan B. Now she's talking about a writing workshop that she's leading for inmates at San Quentin. And she describes in the book how she had been telling them the same thing she tells everybody in workshops, that they should pay attention, they should, you know, look at what's going on in their life. And then she starts talking about how she brought her friend Neshama to come with her. And she writes, "Then I introduced Neshama, with the concern that the prisoners wouldn't quite get her. This intense grandmother with a nice big butt and fuzzy gray hair, wearing a loud flannel dress. I had invited her because I love her stories and knew it would be more fun for me. I had extremely low expectations. I'd hoped a few prisoners might form a guild, like the one that Neshama belongs to. I'd hoped they wouldn't hurt her, or overcome her, or try to make her marry them. Neshama walked to the mic and told her first story, her version of a folk tale. It was about a man with no luck, who comes upon safety, wealth, and a beautiful woman, but is too busy looking for fancier luck, for something else, to even notice her. Neshama painted her story with her hands leading into the crowd, drawing them in, hopeful, aghast at the unlucky man's journey, smiling gleefully at the story's close. And the place went nuts. Here they had thought Neshama was coming to teach them something, and instead she had sung them a song. Their faces lit up with surprise. She was shining on them, and they felt her shining on them, and so they shone back. Neshama stripped her story down to the essence, because only essence speaks to desperate people. And the men rose and gave her a standing ovation. It was a stunning moment. All she had done was tell them, I'm human, you're human, let's be human together. Let's just be people together for a while. Lamott continues, in that moment I saw that their lives were of value. I had a sudden desire to send them all of my books, all of my friends' and my father's books as well, also to donate my organs. Why did these men make me feel like being so generous? Was it the fresh air we'd brought in? The wind and the rain and ourselves? It was as if we'd come with an accordion, and as we talked and listened, let our breath fill the air and theirs. In and out past the metal reeds, there was breath, there was fresh air. So ends the reading. Today we're talking about grace. Grace is a way of opening up to something new. We hear the word grace many places, full of grace, moments of grace, surprised by grace. They all point to something which we can recognize but don't actually know what to put our finger on. In the Christian scriptures, Matthew has Mary being greeted by the angel saying, Hail Mary, full of grace. Full of possibilities of divinity that nobody has thought of before. Full of the entirety of God. Later Christianity had very definite meaning for the word grace. It referred specifically to the gift of salvation that God gave everyone through Jesus' death and resurrection. Grace in that particular moment was a vehicle, a gift from God to free people from sin and open them up to a new way of being in connection with God. Hindu teaching has a different flavor entirely for the word grace, but it still is there. In Hinduism, grace is described as the ultimate key to self-understanding. It's not so much a gift as something that we earn through hard work. In the bhakti path of devotion, is one of the paths of Hinduism, through hard work, through worship, through devotion, you open yourself up to be freed from that path, that cycle that they believe we're all on of death and rebirth and death and rebirth. It's called samsara. And what you're aiming for is to be freed to moksha, to being out of that cycle, to being open, to being just in relationship with God. But still grace is that key. Grace is that thing that opens up, takes you from being stuck in one place and opens you up to another way. How do we have grace today in our lives? When I think of moments of grace, I think of tiny ones and I think of really large ones, and they all have that same thing in common. One I remember really clearly, it's probably more than 10 years ago, I was driving to work, driving the same place I drove every day, and suddenly I happened to glance off at this field that I always passed, and there was just some glint that caught my eye. In that moment, I felt that I was winked at. I felt like all of nature had gone, look at this day. And in that moment, I did look, and I saw this beautiful sun-drenched field, the fresh, moist morning summer air. It woke me up out of that place that I had been into a new appreciation of what the day was. That was a moment of grace. It woke me up out of my driving to work every day and made me see life in a new way. Another moment of grace I remember, and I count, is from when I was in ninth grade, and I had this wonderful teacher named Mrs. Teitelbaum. And one morning, Mrs. Teitelbaum said to me, "You know, that was a great essay. You are a fine writer." And that moment just opened me up. Me? A writer? It was not a concept I had ever thought of myself as. I was just a student in school. I wasn't a writer. But that opened me to looking at myself as a writer, seeing new possibilities, new definitions of who I could be in the world. Another moment of grace. Some things are totally mundane, like now I drive every day to Chicago through the morning commute in the traffic. But there's different days are different, and some days I'm just driving along and I'm following the people in front of me and I'm not paying attention and I get there. But some days I am paying attention, and some days, you know, it just flows. I see that little space open and I go over there, and I see this space open and I go over there. And the only difference is I'm paying attention. Those spaces are there every single morning. But all those little spaces, when I'm paying attention, feel like a moment of grace, an opening, a different way of being in relationship to the traffic that morning. Moments of grace which open up possibilities that we had not seen before. And some of them can be really, really huge, life-changing moments of grace. I had one of those as well back in the 90s when I lived in Colorado. At that point, I was still a Catholic, a very devout Catholic woman. And I was having a very difficult period in my life when I was struggling with depression and insomnia. And it was just a time when I was struggling. I was praying and struggling. And one day, I was just so tired in the middle of my afternoon work day, I went home to try and actually sleep. But as soon as my head hit that pillow, eyes were wide awake. So angry. I started screaming at that God. I started yelling at that God, saying, "You know, I've done everything you wanted. Why won't you give me what I want?" Just full of anger and sadness and depression. And I had a moment of grace where I was just filled with this feeling of being held in love. Just love. And the idea that filled my head was, why don't you appreciate what you have? In that moment, I was able to go, oh, I have three beautiful children. I live here in the mountains of Colorado. It's gorgeous. I have everything I need. And that moment was so powerful. It made me, sent me out into the world to start studying other faith traditions, other religions, other ways of seeing people who saw the world from that place of grace, from that place of love, from that place of being whole. And that moment in Colorado moved me through my studies to eventually finding Unitarian Universalism and becoming a Unitarian minister, standing right here. That was a powerful moment of grace which opened me from this narrow idea of who I was in the world into a different possibilities. Changed me to the core. I think I'm talking about grace this morning because today we need grace more than ever. It's part of the human condition to get stuck in ruts, to become preoccupied, to be distracted, to only see what we expect to see. We need those moments of grace to open us up, to allow for newness, to allow for hope. The first story that Karen told today about the little man with his shoes set towards paradise, towards heaven, someone turned around and turned his shoes around for him. He went back to his old life, and all that had changed was his vision of what he saw. But expecting to see goodness, expecting to see love, that's what he found. And in Anne Lamott's story, nobody did it to them from the outside. It was Neshama. It was Neshama bringing her whole self to these men, bringing her whole self and what she was in the world, which opened them up, which gave them a moment of grace to be who they were. Lamott writes here, Neshama thought they were going to teach them a lesson, and instead she sung them a song. She gave them grace, beauty. She gave them hope. She gave them the ability to see the life in a different world. We all need that. We all need to wake up from the worlds we've created and to open up to something new. Julia Ward Howe was the woman who actually created Mother's Day for us. And she didn't create it as a Hallmark holiday to send flowers and cards to your mom.
Sorry.
Not a bad thing. She created it because it was after the Civil War. And she said, look at this, all of our sons have died. We raise up our sons, we teach them to love, we teach them to be good, and then we send them off to kill people. That's not right. As mothers, we need to say, this isn't right. As mothers, we need to hold up that peace is important. And that's why she set this day. She set this day that mothers could open up the world and break us out of this idea of being stuck in you have to fight, you have to fight, you have to fight, and realize that those mothers across, whoever we're fighting, they have mothers who are mourning their sons. And as mothers, we have to open up the world from this stuck way of always being in conflict to say, no, we can be in union with one another. That was a grace that she tried to give our world. And right now there's a minister who's trying to bring back Mother's Day as a place of activism, a place of saying, no, this Mother's Day is about peace. Open it up out of what we think it is into the possibilities that it can be. We need grace. We need new possibilities. If we don't have a little devil to turn around our shoes, we have to do it ourselves. Because grace is not some rare or arcane or, you know, magic quality which comes from outside of us. No, grace is something that we can create every moment by being here in this moment. Today and always, we can be grace in this world. And now, we're going to be graced with some beautiful music as we have our offertory.
This is the time for our offertory, as they will be singing. We come to this place because we love what exists here. This church is a living entity, and like all living things, it must have nurture and sustenance. Its breath and its heartbeat, its life itself, can only be derived from its living components, us. The offering will now be received.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Amen.
saying that when you sing, you pray twice. And I think that you've just prayed for all of us. Thank you. When was the last time you had your shoes turned around? Really? When was the last time you turned around on the shelf? Or somebody else came and said, oh, go back the same way that you came. It can be really incredibly frustrating, especially when you don't know that it's happening. This word grace is a hard word for me. I don't know if it's a hard word for you. The first time that I remember the word coming into my consciousness was when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I think I was 7. My mom will correct me after the service. This is a story about mom. When you're 7, you're in mom's house. You're in dad's house too, but mostly it's mom who has the territory there. And we had just moved to Mequon, Wisconsin, and I remember my grandparents coming to visit us. These are people that never visited us. Always we would trundle into a car at the beginning of the summer at some point, travel out to New York to go and work for them. At least that's what it always felt like. I'm sure that we were learning and doing great things, but we would weed their garden. We would put cobblestones in for their driveway. We learned so much. I learned how to arch from my grandfather. You know, not the normal ball throwing, you know, how to do a bow and arrow. But this time, they were coming out to Mequon to visit us, these people that I was a little afraid of, to be really honest with you. My grandfather came in, the first meal was set, and he said, who would say grace? I, being the youngest of the 3 children and getting that this was important to my grandfather, said, me, I'll say grace. Grandpa said, okay, Karen's saying grace. Very good. We're all sat down for dinner. Table's a little bit more crowded than usual because there are 2 more people there. People got quiet. My mother turned to me and with a slight nod indicated that it was time. And I said, grace. And my grandfather turned about 5 different shades of red. My mother began fidgeting with stuff. My siblings began laughing uncontrollably. They knew that I had stepped in it. And I didn't know what was wrong, but I knew that I had done something. I was brought up in a Unitarian household. We didn't say grace. Grace wasn't a concept that we sort of knew about or talked about. I believed inherently in the web that you see written on the pillars of your church. I believed that everybody was loved. So I didn't understand that there was something more to grace. What is grace at dinner? Help me out here. Why do we say grace at dinner?
Being thankful.
We're being thankful. What else?
Celebrate.
Some people say grace is a blessing for the food, that sort of prayer of may it help our bodies and our minds. Grace also in our culture defines a little bit of a place where we feel less than, right? The beautiful hymn that you sang, Amazing Grace, about Wilberforce going over the seas and realizing on, you know, after 20 years of traveling with slaves, for the one person that might not know about this, and which used to be me, said, you know, grace found me. I was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. In those beautiful, arching, aching hymn, grace also is a place where we look and say, I've fallen short and I am in need. I think that as Unitarians, I don't know, I'll ask my mom after this and perhaps my dad too since he's here. I think for me as growing up and as a Unitarian, it was hard to look and say, where am I lost? Because I thought that the world was my oyster. I thought that everything was there. Grace was a place for thanks. Grace was a place for blessing. Grace was a place for goodness. But it wasn't necessarily a place where I was in need. But in that moment, I was in need of my shoes being turned around. I needed
from my grandfather's perspective, to get a little bit more religion, though he was not a religious person. But what he wanted, I think, for us as a family was to grapple with this question of where am I in need of saying thanks? Where am I in need of saying maybe I'm not all that? So we began talking about God and things in my family. My dad, and I hope that he will smile when I say this, is a devout atheist. He is one of the smartest people that I know. When I was a kid, he read things like how to build geodesic domes and what the power of Buckminster Fuller's things were. And I thought that when I grew older, I would just naturally do that, and I find as I get older that I'm not doing that. And I'm like, oh, perhaps I have to make that choice to do that. So he, really smart guy, right, doesn't believe in God. His daughter, however, does. And we began this conversation when I was young, and it's a conversation that has gone on time and time again. Whenever I'm there, whenever I'm visiting, as I was this weekend, somehow we'll make our journey into these words of faith and grace and what does it mean to believe in God. About 6 years ago, my mom started taking notes with the conversation that we were having, and I had started seminary, and I came and said, I thought that I had defined what I believed about God. And I said that I believe that God is that which exists in all things. That which exists in all things. God is that which connects all things. And God is that which holds all things together. I felt like this was a way to be able to turn my shoes around, to be able to say to my dad, who I have the most respect for, and my mom, who I love beyond, this is what I believe. That somehow this word, small, ugly, sometimes challenging word, might be something that we could talk about in these terms. God isn't, you know, the Sistine Chapel, it's not the face of only a man. It's not even just the face of the trees or the beauty of the earth. God is that which exists in all things. Good, bad, ugly, all things. Which connects all things and holds all things together. I think that his shoes got turned about 90 degrees. And we began walking again. You know, this is the great thing about having parents and having people in my life that I can be in conversation with. And about 3 years ago, I'm sorry. It amazes me to have people like my parents in my life. It amazes me to have people who are intelligent, like I'm sure all of you, who are intelligent and still willing to hold the truths that they know with open hands and examine them. And he came to me and he said, Karen, I have a word for you. He said, I think God is love. And I just started weeping. We had given one another passports to the world that had started on different continents. We had each taken our shoes and turned them in a new direction so that we could walk together. And here's where grace comes in. When I was 7, I didn't know what grace was. I could just say grace, and I thought that I was, you know, being important and all of that. Now I can use the word grace, and I know that that word grace, in the thanks, in the blessing, in the need for forgiveness, holds forth a different quality because it is enveloped in this other word, love. Grace not out of fear, Grace not out of I'm less than. Grace not out of I need, but grace because there is a world that is so abundant that I have. Thank you. Meister Eckhart said long, long ago, if you had no other prayer to say in this world but thank you, that would be enough. My friends, grace, we need moments of grace. And we need, I think, those moments when our shoes can be turned around or turned somehow so that we can bring this vision of grace as thanks, this vision of God as love, not fear, out to the world. Bishop Desmond Tutu, a person who probably knows more about forgiveness than I hopefully will ever need to in my life, said to a friend of his, I don't know who the friend was, about the religion of Christianity. This is not, we forget, this is not a religion about virtue. It is a religion about grace. What would our world look like if we brought that understanding to the evangelicals down the street? If we brought that understanding to our conversations about Mitt Romney? If we brought that understanding to our conversations about Scott Walker? Okay, these are my places of challenge. I don't know where your places of challenge are. If I go looking for grace, I just might find it in the most impossible and improbable places in my life today. If I go looking for grace, I just might find it in the most impossible and improbable places in my life today. What about you? Who's going to turn your shoes around?
Our congregational affirmation is number 507. And we can do this in unison. Grant us the ability to find joy and strength, not in the strident call to arms, but in stretching out our arms to grasp our fellow creatures in the striving for justice and truth. Please rise as you are willing and able for our closing hymn, 128.
To use.
closing words are from Denise Levertov. As swimmers dare to lie and face the sky, and water bears them up. As hawks rest upon the air and the air sustains them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace.
Okay, one final song for you all. This is a song that celebrates, I guess the messiness of life at some level, and how we all move through it. I don't have to match my socks to know that God's there. I don't have to clean the tub or take the trash nowhere. No, it doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter what I do. I just need to listen for the still small voice of you. It's a whispering of angels, the whispering of angels. It's a whispering of angels, the whispering of angels. Oh, feeling guilty makes me shout like I'm filling up some hole. Oh, smiling when I want to cry, and crying when I'm told. There's nothing I can say or do, there's nothing I can be. Only matters that there's one thing to which I am true. It's the whispering of angels, the whispering of angels. It's the whispering of angels. Whisper, whispering of angels.
Whether it's grace of thanks, or grace of possibilities, or grace of love, may you go out today and be full of grace.
It's a whispering of
angels, a whispering of angels.
Find your angel. Thank you. Be blessed and be a blessing in the world.